Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. Maggie McMillan is the new Juno Arts and Humanities Council's Executive Director. The JAC announced the hire today, more than 6 months after the former director stepped down in May.
Between my love for art and my love for the community, it was just like a pillar I've always had my eye on. And if I had the opportunity to try to lead it, I really wanted to try.
McMillan served as the Juno Chamber of Commerce's director for 3 years before taking a role in donor relations earlier this year at the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. She says she's excited to bring her experience in economics to the JAC.
I'm really excited to figure out how we make it a more profitable nonprofit.
Phil Hebshin led the local arts organization for 2 years before resigning following the JAC board's decision to remove diversity, equity, and inclusion language from its website. The board said the language cuts were temporary and in response to the Trump administration's threat to cut federal funding to organizations that use DEI language in their programming. Stacy Katas served as the interim director as the search for the new director was extended. In August, the JAC increased the salary range for the role to be between $110,000 and $140,000. McMillan's hire comes shortly after the Juno Assembly reallocated $5 million, originally intended for a new Capital Civic Center building, toward glacial outburst flood mitigation instead. The proposed new convention center and performing arts venue would replace the JAC and Centennial Hall. Voters rejected a ballot proposition intended to fund the construction in 2019. McMillan starts her new role at the JAC on December 1st. This is KTOO. Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. A district court judge has dismissed the eviction cases against three tenants refusing to vacate their rentals in the historic Telephone Hill neighborhood in downtown Juneau. Instead, a superior court judge presiding over a lawsuit filed by tenants against the city late last month will decide the outcome. The lawsuit seeks to stop the city's demolition of the historic neighborhood and stop the evictions. The city plans to demolish the houses on the hill later this winter to make way for newer, denser housing to combat the city's housing crunch. The court hasn't yet scheduled any hearings for that lawsuit. City Attorney Emily Wright says it's unclear if or how the dismissals may impact the city's plan to move forward with demolition of the homes this winter. She says the city is disappointed in the district judge's ruling and plans to ask that the lawsuit in Superior Court be expedited.
We'll work with the tenants and their attorney in the other Superior Court case to look at the best options for them and for the city. But once you've moved into court, it can be a very long process to get a resolution.
The tenants' lawsuit, which has three plaintiffs, claims that the city improperly evicted people on the hill, illegally phased the redevelopment, and that the project fails to comply with federal and state historic preservation acts. The city denies these claims. Joe Carson called the eviction dismissals a win. Carson is a plaintiff in the lawsuit and one of the tenants who hasn't vacated. He said he plans to continue to live in his apartment on the hill as long as possible.
I want to stay in my home, of course. Just because you rent doesn't mean that, you know, it's not your home. And that's my home.
Fred Treem, the tenant's attorney, said that the tenants continuing to live in the old homes as the weather gets cold helps preserve them.
Our ultimate goal is to preserve the old buildings, especially the telephone switchboard and that building constructed in 1882, which is the oldest continuously occupied dwelling house in the state of Alaska. Amen.
Advocates claim that the Edward Webster House is the oldest still occupied house in the state. Under the Alaska Uniform Residential Landlord and Tenant Act, the city cannot take retaliatory action against the tenants, like turning off the utilities, while they wait for the outcome of the lawsuit. And Juneau's sole electricity provider, Alaska Electric Light and Power, is appealing the Regulatory Commission of Alaska's decision to approve a new public utility. This month, the Superior Court of Alaska consolidated two separate cases involving disputes between the hydroelectric companies. KTOO's Alex Solomon has more.
This appeal follows more than a decade of disputes between AEL&P and Juno Hydropower, a company that plans to increase the borough's hydroelectric capacity by nearly 20%. The company plans to shuttle power to rural parts of Juno in the next few years with its Sweetheart Lake hydroelectric project. In June, the commission ordered AEL&P to facilitate Juno Hydropower's connection with its existing electricity infrastructure. And in July, the two utilities hashed out agreements to make that happen. Alec Mesdeg is the CEO of AEL&P. He disputes the commission's decision to exempt Juno Hydropower from a requirement to have at least 10 customers when it certified the company as a public utility. The company has one contracted customer, Kensington Mine. Mesdeg also has outstanding complaints about the agreements AEL&P was ordered to sign, which he hopes the Superior Court will help resolve. Namely, the commission ordered AEL&P to reserve 8.5 megawatts of transfer capacity in its system before Juno Hydropower is up and running without compensation. Mesdeg worries about additional costs if, in the meantime, AEL&P's existing customers increase their power use enough to eat into that reserve.
Do I have to build upgrades to ensure that we can, you know, transfer another 8.5 megawatts on top of that?
Mesdeg also disagrees with the commission's decision to approve Juno Hydropower's design of the interconnection point, where electricity generated at Sweetheart Lake will join AEL&P's Snettisham power line to Juno.
It is a bad precedent that any entity who disputes the utility's position on what creates a safe and reliable interconnection that protects its customers can simply insist that their project will die if the commission does not order the utility to accommodate their every wish.
Duff Mitchell is the managing director at Juno Hydropower. He says the case is frivolous. The two utilities spent more than a week in hearings before five commissioners, who decided to approve Juno Hydropower's public utility certificate and Sweetheart Lake project plan.
You know, basically their case is, you know, we got our butt kicked in the hockey game 5-0, and now we're a sore loser and we're blaming the ref.
Mitchell says that AEL&P's disputes are merely quibbles and that he's charging forward with his project.
We're proceeding with the lawful order we have, and we're moving on to put this project into construction. We're bringing the power for Juno's prosperity.
The Regulatory Commission of Alaska declined to comment. In Juno, I'm Alex Solomon.
And a lawsuit from Alaska's only Native reservation will proceed over the objections of other Southeast Alaska tribes. That's after a federal judge declined a request from a coalition of tribes, including the largest in Southeast, to throw out Metlakatla Indian Community's lawsuit challenging the state's authority to regulate its fishermen. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
Metlakatla Indian Community asserts in its five-year-old lawsuit that the state has no right to regulate the tribe's fishermen. Its attorneys say that's because when Congress created Metlakatla's reservation in 1891, Congress implicitly included a federally guaranteed right to fish in nearby waters. The state of Alaska disagrees, saying Metlakatla members should be subject to the same rules governing the rest of Alaska's fishermen. The case was headed for trial when a coalition of other tribes weighed in, arguing it should be dismissed outright. Richard Monkman is an attorney representing the Central Council of Tlingit Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska and several smaller Southeast tribes.
They felt this is something that should be resolved between the tribes and not by a federal judge.
Monkman says the tribes argued that granting Metlakatla's members the right to fish in waters near Ketchikan and Prince of Wales Island would violate their rights to their cultural property.
We would analogize this to other cultural rights like dances, stories, carving, other types of rights that all sort of fall under the general category of Atu in Tlingit language or cultural rights which belong to the clans and belong to the houses within clans.
Metlakatla's attorneys, however, argued that the right to fish in those areas was not legally protected, in part because of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Chris Lundberg is an attorney representing Metlakatla.
With the exception of Metlakatla, all Alaska Natives participated in that act, and it was a settlement, and it in exchange for releasing all claims to Aboriginal right type claims and claims to land and fishing areas, the tribes received compensation.
There is still a long way to go for the case. For one thing, the state has filed a motion for summary judgment, which would end the case without a trial. But Lundberg says Judge Sharon Gleason's decision puts the case back on track. It's unclear when it might go to trial. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And the Trump administration has a new offshore drilling proposal to offer nearly all of the oceans off Alaska to potential leasing. The draft plan would open the Bering Sea, the Gulf of Alaska, and other areas important to the fishing industry. It's part of a national proposal that the Interior Secretary Doug Burgum says will help ensure Alaska energy dominance. It includes lease sales off the entire coast of California, where drilling is fiercely unpopular. The top Democrat of the U.S. House Natural Resources Committee, California's Jared Huffman, pledged to fight it in court and in Congress. Representative Huffman says it doesn't make sense for Alaska either.
I just think it's incredibly reckless. I mean, we know what the seafood economy means to the state of Alaska.
That plan goes beyond what Alaska advocates of offshore development have favored in the past. In 2018, Alaska's all-Republican delegation to Congress praised an offshore plan that included a lease sale in the Cook Inlet and the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas. But they asked the first Trump administration to remove the Bering Sea and the Gulf from consideration. The plan released yesterday is called a first analysis, with two more planned before final approval. If it survives, the first lease sale would be in the Beaufort. It is not clear oil companies would be interested. Shell spent 10 years and $7 billion trying to drill there before giving up on offshore Arctic exploration. This is KTOO.